And thank you. I am going to ask Tim to lead us in the pledge, and if anybody has any cover, please remove it.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Tim. Can we have roll call?
Yes, Member Thomas.
I'm here.
Member Mota.
Present.
Member Fiebig.
Present.
Member Davis.
Present.
Member Davini.
Present.
Vice Chair Mulgrew is excused. Chair Moore.
Present.
Okay, we have quorum.
Thank you. Okay, the next item on the agenda is an area of the meeting where if you would like to speak on an item that is not on the agenda tonight, we can get a speaker card. But if you haven't filled one out yet and you would like to speak, you can approach the podium and you'll have 3 minutes. And we're going to go between the room and then we'll go to online. So let's see, open forum. We have Brian Foster. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Chair Moore and Chair Moore and members of the council. Just a quick aside, not an official context. My Boy Scout training tells me that that flag should be on that side. Does that sound right to anybody else? Or am I just way off? No? Okay.
Didn't do Boy Scouts.
Okay. All right.
We'll put it on that side tomorrow.
Just might check. Okay.
I'm sorry. Could you speak right into the mic so that they can pick you up?
Yeah, I could actually lean into it, but then this thing is going to collapse.
Oh.
So I'll do my best. Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay. So I was last here about a month or so ago talking about the Hamburger Island fiasco. And I made a lot of points, most of which were actually fixed when they redid the timing of the lights. So now the traffic is back to what it was kind of pre-changes. Still not better, still not improved. But a lot of members of the community and I made a lot of recommendations I thought that could improve traffic even better. And my guess is, at least I hold the guess, that nothing will be done with those, that Public Works will not take note of them, that there's no official report, no official anything that's going to happen, like they have done with many other projects here in the community. So, you know, that same night, they asked for the Bike Commission, which you guys voted against. And I kind of, on the fly, said, well, what we really need as well is a Drivers, Commuters, Parkers Commission. Because we seem to be the one group that is underrepresented in the community, at least our needs are, on a proportionate basis. And I said it almost flippantly, but the more I thought about it, the more I'm serious about it. Because if you look around at all the developments that they've been doing, all the changes to the streets, what they did in Stanton, what they're doing right now in Somerset, what they plan to do in Hyer, throughout the entire unincorporated area, all of it is to, sorry, this microphone keeps moving. All of it is to essentially support a reduction in speed, creating choke points, especially with the bulb outs, no right turns. And it's all for pedestrian safety. But I wonder how many pedestrian accidents were there in the last 5, 10 years? Does it really warrant additional safety? If it's general safety, let's just put a stoplight on every single street corner. What's the thinking going on? You know, the concrete that's over by Hamburger Island. What's the thinking going on? So last Thursday, there was an unincorporated budget meeting in Cherryland with members of all unincorporated community areas. And it turned into really a gripe session with members of each of the unincorporated areas saying, this is what we don't like about the county. And it became clear, at least to me, and by the facilitator as well, that people think that Public Works is out of touch. In fact, lacks common sense. They don't know what's going on. They don't follow up. They don't ask us anything. They just do things to us, like the green bike lanes on the boulevard. So I'm here to ask you, as a MAC, to calendar for your next meeting, a session where maybe you can institute, create, develop a citizen input or review or a MAC review of Public Works projects. Because we need to be considered in what they do. Instead of feeling like slaves that are just dropped where things are just dropped upon us, They should ask us first. Does this make sense? Right? And if, you know, even if you go back to the early drawings of the Hamburger Island thing, if you look at the big concrete pour, you can't tell that that's going to be concrete. It just has some lines on it, you know, new street lines and a satellite map. It didn't white it out, say concrete. How would you know? How would the community know? What they're doing is not accountable, it's not transparent, and it's not fair to us. And not just us, members of other unincorporated areas as well.
Hey, Brian, we're up 3 minutes. And
so I need to be quiet.
Yeah.
My free speech has been
kept. Yeah, you can stand there if you want, but you can't talk anymore.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Chair Moore, excuse me.
Thank you. Do we have any speakers online?
Nobody has raised their hand. If you wish to speak and you're in front of a computer, you can press the raise hand button at the bottom of your screen. If you're on a telephone, you can press *9 and that will let us know you wish to speak. Nobody's raised their hand.
Any speakers?
Nobody. There are no speakers, no.
Do we have any other speakers in the room that would like to speak on the open forum? An item that's not on the agenda. We have no more speakers online. We have no speakers in the room. So I'm going to close the public open forum portion of the meeting. And I have nothing for the consent calendar. So let's go ahead and move to the regular calendar.
Minutes?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I did skip the minutes, didn't I? Yeah. Let's back up here and let's look at the minutes from August 25th, 2025.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve the minutes of August 25th.
I'll second it.
And I know that you had an additional comment that you wanted to add, which I accepted.
I'd like to just add one thing. I remember having a pretty in-depth conversation about the right to farm in the minutes under the chair's speaker. Area. So I was wondering if the council's okay with amending the minutes and adding that the importance of the right to farm.
I accept that.
You okay with it? Okay. Let's go ahead and have a vote. All in favor?
I think we take a
roll call
vote. Member Thomas?
Yes.
Member Mota?
Yes.
Member Fiebig?
Yes.
Member Davis?
Aye.
Member Davini?
Aye.
Chair Moore?
Yes.
Okay, item passes.
Okay, now we can move on to the next item on the agenda, and that is item number 2, which is the tentative parcel map.
Yes, and I will be presenting it, Rodrigo Orduña with the Alameda County Planning Department. Let me set up the PowerPoint presentation. For those in the room, there's copies of the slides in the back. And let me see, where's my share button? If you can give me 1 second. Okay. Again, my name is Rodrigo Orduña. I will be presenting for Morales Maeli, who is actually out sick today. The first item on the agenda is Vesting Tentative Parcel Map PM11534. It is case number 2025-00084. The parcel address is 4639 James Avenue. And this is a proposal to allow a tentative parcel map subdivision of an approximately 0.4 acre property, which is just over 20,000 square feet, from one parcel into 3 parcels. The property owner is Xiaoping Zhang. The applicant is Alex Chen. The general plan land use designation is R1, single family residential, that allows a residential neighborhood. A minimum lot size is 5,000 square feet. The zoning is also R1, single-family residential, a density of between 4 and 8 units to the acre. And the RV means that a recreational vehicle is allowed to be parked on the property under certain circumstances. Staff considers that this proposed subdivision from 1 to 3 parcels is exempt from the California Environmental Quality Act, so we did not conduct an environmental review. And this is per section 15315 of the CEQA guidelines, which is class 15 minor land divisions. The location of the parcel is shown in the aerials. North is to the bottom. The parcel is located at the south side of James Avenue. Here are some views of the street along the property frontage. There would be improvements made, curb gutter and sidewalk. The existing house would be demolished. The subdivision again encompasses an existing parcel of about 20,000 square feet. The net parcel sizes are as follows. Parcel one is 8,300 square feet. Parcel two is 7,200 square feet. Parcel three is 5,000 square feet. These are all net areas. From this, this does not include the private street that would be commonly owned and operated by all three members, by all three resulting parcels. We do not count the resulting private streets as part of the net lot area. Here is a quick site plan of the proposal. This is what would result. There are no houses currently being designed. This is only a proposal to subdivide the land without a proposal to create houses yet. If and when houses are built, there would be no design review. That is a discretionary review process. There would be a design review at staff level comparing the proposed design of the houses to our residential design standards and guidelines and our objective standards for development of housing. The setbacks, I will go into it in a bit, but the setbacks and distances from the private driveway are met. You can see in the blue hatching is the developable site area. So a house could be developed within the blue hatched area for resulting parcels 1, 2, and 3. This is a slightly closer view of the parcels. There would be some trees removed that are existing on the parcel. The larger trees in the back of the property would be kept. And there are certain improvements proposed, such as the new fire hydrant at the front of the property. Part of what's allowable per the subdivision regulations is to consider the parcel's frontage on a public right-of-way and to count guest parking spaces as potentially being located along the parcel frontage. So here is 4639, and I'll go back in a bit here. The proposed resident parking spots, which are 2 per house, so you would have 2 resident parking spots for parcel 1, 2 resident parking spots for parcel 2, 2 resident parking spots for parcel 3. You would also have space for, in the private street, a proposed guest parking spot and 2 more guest parking spots along the public right-of-way along James Avenue. Again, these are not designated only for the guests of this development. These are parking spots that are available for anybody to use. This is a public street, and anybody could park on the frontage to this property. It's not at all reserved for the guests of this development, but based on the development regulations, they are allowed to be counted as potential guest parking spaces. Again, knowing that anybody could use those guest parking spaces, not at all related to this development. Also, within the development, the developable area, there on the driveway aprons, there could be additional guest parking in addition to the parking in the garages. So staff considers that there is available parking for the residents and for the guests. And to verify this, the applicant, this is an applicant's survey, a parking survey between Madison Avenue and Sandy Road along James Avenue. And basically what they did is they went out on September 16, September 17, September 18, September 19. They went out at 4:45 p.m. through 5:15, at 5:15 p.m. the next day through 5:45, and then twice on the 18th at 8:45 a.m. to 9:15 a.m., and again at 5:20 p.m. through 5:50 p.m., and again on the 19th at 8:40 a.m. through 9 a.m., and they counted the vehicles parked on the street. And there's more detail provided in the paperwork that I have in the back of the room, but the applicant is also here to speak to the available on-street parking if the MAC so wishes. So basically, the result was that there were about, along this stretch, there were, during the different days, there were potential for various parking spots. So for example, on the, this is on, 9:16 at 4:45 to 5:15 p.m., there were 16 spots available on street. On the 17th at 5:15 to 5:45, there were 12. On the 18th at 8:45 a.m. to 9:15 a.m., there were 10. On 9:18 in the afternoon from 5:20 to 5:50, there were 13. And then the last day, 9:19 to 9:25, there were 11. So out of the potential 40 spots available on the frontages, those were the numbers that were actually available. Here's some more views during those times of the potential for on-street parking. And again, more views from the various days and times of the relative parking available on-street. So we did receive five calls of concern, four of concern and one wanting to know more information about the subdivision. Two calls showed concern regarding traffic congestion and one call regarding potential water runoff and one call asking about water building development information, primarily about their view being affected. So regarding traffic congestion, the Alameda County Public Works Agency does not have specific counts for this stretch of the public right-of-way, but what they do have is an index of county-maintained roadways, and they consider that up to 2,000 cars per day travel in a typical minor road, and that's the classification that, that this street is designated. And in general, this is our general rule of thumb. The ITE manual, the Institute of Transportation Engineers, the ITE manual for potential vehicle trips generated by single family homes. They offer quite a range between 4 at the low end vehicle trips per household and 21 trips per household per day. The general rule of thumb is that somewhere around 10 vehicle trips per household. So there's one existing house being demolished, will be replaced by one house, and there would be two new households. So a total of two new households. So with an average of around 10 vehicle trips a day, you're looking at 20 vehicle trips a day for a segment of street that can accommodate 2,000 cars per day. Staff does not consider that this additional increment would cause congestion, and in response, the County Public Works Agency also considered that they expressed no concern over the potential for congestion from this subdivision from one lots into three lots. Regarding runoff, there are standard conditions of approval by the Public Works Agency Land Development Division that state that development shall not augment or concentrate runoff, nor block the runoff from adjacent properties. That no grading shall be permitted until grading plan and erosion and an erosion and sedimentation control plan will be reviewed and approved by the county grading department and a grading permit is issued. And the subdivider must provide stormwater protections that conform to the current version of the technical guidance C3 permit that we get, which is published by Alameda County Clean Water Program. So basically, stormwater runoff, water drainage, those are covered and those must be provided, solutions must be provided for review and approval by the County Public Works Agency as a standard condition anytime there's development on any property. Regarding views, any and all housing developed would be allowed by existing regulations in the zoning ordinance to be up to two stories tall, 25 feet height within 15 feet of any property line, or an absolute maximum of 30 foot high, and that's to allow for roof pitches. So the maximum height allowable is 30 feet. Anywhere more than 15 feet away from any property line, within 15 feet away from any property line, they're allowed 25 feet tall. And that's a typical two-story building, and they're allowed two stories. The development regulations require that there are certain setbacks met, 20 feet from the front, 20 feet from the rear, and depending on the lot width, it can vary. It starts at 5 foot minimum side yard setbacks and goes up to 10 foot side yard setbacks. And it's a 1 foot increment for every 10 feet of lot width. So two of these parcels would be required to have 8 foot side yard setbacks and one would be required to have a 6 foot side yard setback. And there would also be minimum distances required from a private street of, depending on the locations, 20 feet for the one that's at the end, and then 10 feet and 10 feet for the ones where the private street passes the house. So again, currently there is no housing proposed. So when the housing is proposed, it would be required to conform with our residential design standards and guidelines and our objective standards. And again, the height limits, the setbacks, lot coverage cannot, if you're proposing a one-story home, your lot coverage is 45% of the resulting lot size, or 40% lot coverage if you've got a two-story house. I just went over the height limits. The second story must be no more than 80% of the area of the first story so that we don't just create boxes, but we create housing with a certain architectural articulation. They must be provided with some kind of pedestrian access entry, such as a porch, 5 foot depth with a 5% of the building floor area. And then there must be the paving facing the street cannot cover more than 50% of the lot frontage to provide some landscaping articulation, so it's not just all paved driveways. So again, there is no proposed design for the houses. There is the proposed subdivision from 1 to 3 parcels. And when those designs do come in, should this subdivision be approved, then those designs would be compared to the residential design standards and guidelines. And with that, this is a planning director decision. We're looking to the Castro Valley MAC to provide the plan director with a recommendation of your considerations on this application. And with that, staff's available for any questions. Thank you.
Is the applicant here?
Yes.
Is the applicant, would they like to share anything that wasn't shared?
Would you like to speak on this application? So if you could please pick up the microphone over there and make sure it's on.
Thank you, Rich Go, for the presentation, fellow councilors. My name is Alex. Is this good?
Yes.
One thing I'd like to clarify really quickly if with the parking study here, parking spaces study here, actually, we took the survey from Sandy Row to Madison Avenue. So there are about 20 properties, and if each property having two parking spaces at the front, total would be 40 parking spaces available. And we went five times during 3 days. So the peak parking is actually 14 cars, you know, on the street. So subtracting that from 40, so we actually have 26 spaces available in the peak. So so we don't think that there would be an issue for as far as parking concerns. And then in terms of what we try to achieve with this subdivision is to provide high quality starter homes, which are about, I think, like 25 square feet, two-story houses, high-quality starter homes. Because when we approached this project, we thought about there are options to go through the SB9 subdivision, which we can get the, we might be able to get the approval faster without going through the hearing process, but that will drive us to a different route of doing sort of two-unit plus two units, so four units on two lots combined. But we feel like this area deserve a better design and better quality home. So we consider changing course to just do the three-lot subdivision. With the private row and with the sidewalk improvement with the fire hydrant, we think it's you know, it's a win for the neighborhood. I think that's that I want to share. The owner's also here. Would you like to share a few words, or no? You good? So yeah, we good. Unless there's any questions, I can come back to tackle them.
Okay, what I'd like to do is just, if you don't mind, hang in the room here.
Oh no,
I want to go to public comment and get the public comment, and then we'll come back and the council can address any of the questions that we may have.
Okay.
If it's work for you.
Okay.
So, sure. Rodrigo, let's go ahead and go to public comment on this. And thank you for hanging in there. So, Rodrigo, we have one speaker in the room on this item. It's Alex Chen. Was that you? Oh, well, that was easy. Your 3 minutes are up. Rodrigo, do we have anybody online?
So if anybody wishes to speak and you're in front of a computer, please press the raise hand button at the bottom of your screen and that will let us know you wish to speak. Or if you're on a telephone, press *9 and that will let us know you wish to speak. So far, nobody's raised their hand.
Okay, do we have any speakers in the room that would like to speak on this item? Nope, I have no cards. You have nobody online, so I'm going to close the public portion and go to the council for questions and comments. So if you don't mind, we'll start with Councilmember Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While I do agree with the traffic analysis of 10 trips per residential dwelling unit, I do take issue as to the parking study, and it is, back up a little, I don't have a problem with this project with what they did, but I are providing information to future people if they're doing parking studies in residential areas, these aren't the right times. You need to have like 6 a.m. or at 9:00 p.m. because that's when everybody's home. When you're, the times that they took are representative of what's happening during the midday and not necessarily all that. But I, in this case, I don't think that's a going to be a real issue. So I'm just putting that comment forward to staff to remind people the appropriate time to do a study. And with that, I conclude my comments.
Thank you. Councilmember Thomas.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I just have two questions. On page 8, it talks about joint maintenance agreement is needed for the common driveway drainage, the bioretention areas, retaining walls, and parking area. The joint maintenance, who are the parties, county and the applicant, or?
No, the three resulting property owners would be the parties that would jointly maintain the driveway and the common areas for stormwater treatment, as well as any other improvements such as landscaping or retaining walls that are in the common areas, which is the private street.
Okay, got it. So this comes later. I mean, this is not even...
Correct. They need to provide evidence that they have set up. The developer needs to provide evidence that they have set up contract for the resulting property owners to enter into, that they will jointly maintain the driveway.
Okay. And you also, you know, the neighbors complained, some of the concerns came up, and one of the concerns were the view. That also comes up later, right? I mean...
Well, so there is no view ordinance in the county, so anybody has the right to develop within a certain envelope, a three-dimensional envelope, including the height of 25 feet within 15 feet from any property line, and up to 30 feet beyond that 15 feet from the property line. So it may be that views are blocked.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Councilmember Davini.
Thank you, Chair. Rodrigo, please thank the staff planner on this. She did an excellent job, a lot of information. You spent a lot of time talking about parking. I want to reiterate my understanding. Each site is going to be required to have two covered parking spots plus one guest parking. And then you mentioned that in all likelihood, they'll also have the driveway apron for parking. So we could have five parking spots per unit without even talking about off-street parking. Right. Am I correct in that?
Correct.
Okay, good. Thank you for that. Starting on page 9, you give us 7 reasons on why we could deny this this subdivision. And I can't find any of them. I agree with your findings that none of these 7 reasons are reasons to deny this subdivision. They all seem to be consistent with the zoning, the neighborhood, and that they've met all of those tests. So I just wanted that on the record. For the council, the architect Alex mentioned SB9, and this is not an SB9 subdivision. That'd be done at staff level. It'd be a ministerial subdivision if that were the case. But higher density infill projects are going to be before us based on state of California law, whether we like it or not. Each residential lot that exists right now can be subdivided, and each one of those 2 subdivided lots could have up to 2 houses on them, whether it's an attached duplex, a detached duplex, an ADU. So higher density infill projects are coming our way, whether we like them or not. At any rate, I think that's pretty much all I have. Excellent package, a lot of information here. We talked about some of the concerns were storm drain runoff, and you've reiterated to me the condition that all sewer and storm drain is going to have to be pumped up to the road in obviously separate systems.
Yes.
But the storm drain and the increased runoff because of roofs and hardscape shouldn't affect the neighbors, because all of that has to be contained and pumped to the curb, correct?
Correct. There is one of the sheets, 2 of 5, there is a sewer pump station located.
I saw that,
Yeah, so it's being pumped.
Yeah, and then for the community's benefit, there is another fire hydrant that's getting put in there. Seems kind of costly to the applicant, but yeah, I know the area real well. I bought a house there over 35 years ago, actually 2 houses, and my daughters have since bought them from me and live there. So I know this street and this neighborhood real well. And I think that's all the comments and questions I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Mota.
Thank you, Chair. My question is, you mentioned that the existing house will not be diminished, or is it to create 3? I just want to make sure.
So the existing house will be demolished.
Demolished, okay. Okay. And then Let me see what my other question is. Nope, I think you covered everything. I don't have any further questions. Thank you. Very good report.
Thank you, Councilmember Fiebert.
I had a couple of questions. Rodrigo, was everyone notified in the neighborhood about our meeting tonight?
Yes, 500 foot radius.
Okay, and doesn't sound like there was too much response.
Correct. We send out a courtesy notice when we first receive an application, and then we send out the public hearing notice. So today we received a phone call based on that public hearing notice, and they just wanted to know what this project was all about.
Okay. Yeah. Well, sounds like there's not a lot of interest. When you were presenting it, great job presenting it, by the way, when you were presenting it, did I hear you correctly in saying that we would not be able to look at the architectural design and the landscaping? Because this area is a really nice area, and I would hate to see like a, you know, sloppy home get put in a great little neighborhood. So,
unfortunately, no. The designer, in order, we've got balancing interests, right? So part of the intent is to expedite development of housing. And so the state requires that local cities and counties come up with objective design standards that are reviewable at staff level. And it's basically a checklist. We established the parameters for what the design should be. So we've established that there has to be a minimum of two design materials. We've established that there has to be either a pitched roof, or if you're going to be a flat roof, you have to be a certain architectural style. We established height limits. We established that you have to have a front porch. At your fenestration, you have to have some kind of detail that creates either a shadow or a justification such as Pueblo style, which doesn't have a fenestration framing visible from the outside. So there are parameters that have been established, and it's pretty much a staff level checklist of yes, they meet, no, they meet, then send it back to them if they don't meet it, and then come back with updates. It's okay. All staff level.
And I haven't been through this process in a while in Castro Valley. However, the landscaping is also looked at, and it's not like a concrete, you know.
Right, and we have a lot of problems with people paving their front yards over 50%, and our code enforcement agency has a heck of a time trying to get them to switch back to at least 50% landscaping in the front of the house and maximum 50% paving, including the driveway and the walkways.
Okay, because yeah, in designing new new builds, the architectural is quite important, but also the landscaping too. Right. So I'm hoping you guys would do a great job in both those areas.
And for part of this, it would be required to have a licensed landscape architect that meets the California Water Efficiency Landscape Ordinance. That's more technical. It's not so much on the design aspect of the landscaping, but they have to make sure that the landscaping that is provided does not have is actually stamped by a landscape architect. And because it's a large subdivision development, and that it does meet the state regulations regarding water use.
Okay. Yeah, because that James Avenue and Sandy are quite a very nice area of Castro Valley.
Right.
So, and then last question, did I hear you say it's like one common pumping for all three homes? Or is there three pumps?
So there's one in the rear, one on parcel two, and a third on parcel three. So there's okay. Three.
Is that part of the zoning? Because
no, that's part of the technical solution that they, since they don't have an easement in the back, they need to go forward to the street.
I mean, you could have a common though for all three, couldn't you?
Yes, that's not something that I'm the expert on. That okay. Whatever their civil engineer and the county's civil engineer agree to.
Okay, sounds good. Great property. Thanks for the presentation. I don't have any further questions.
Thank you. I just have a couple. When I, my eyes are not quite as good, and my magnifying glass was gone, so I was looking at the road here. Is that a landscaped strip that's between the two properties? The neighboring property?
Oh, yes. We require a landscaping strip.
Okay.
Yes.
I just want to make sure that's a landscape strip.
Right.
And then in front of the home, is there a sidewalk along the three homes?
No. Four or fewer, you're not required a sidewalk. You are required a different paving to differentiate pedestrian walkway area, 3-4 feet wide versus the driveway, so that it's not just a sea of asphalt. So there would be, as part of the design of the actual development, they would be required to provide stamped and stained concrete to designate a walkway.
Okay, so your driveway becomes your walkway.
Yes, and that's typical of many small 3, 4, 5 lot subdivisions.
Right, I was just wondering, I couldn't quite tell because with all the lines.
Right.
So the landscape will go right up to the edge of the asphalt.
There will be a curb.
Or a curb. Okay. And how deep are the parking spaces for the driveway?
It is required to be at least 18 feet deep.
18 feet. So are these going to be 18 feet?
Yes.
And it'll be 18 feet from the curb?
Yes.
Okay. And it says that the garage will not exceed 60%. What size garage is that? Is that a two-car garage or two
it's
and a half?
It's typically a two-car garage.
It's a two-car garage. Okay. And that's about it of my questions. A nice project. I like the way you guys put it together, so thank you. Any other comments from the council? Councilmember Devini, any comments?
I'll make the motion to approve PLN 2020.
Wait, any comments, Sam?
No comments.
No, I'm all good.
Any comments? Any comments? Okay, go ahead and make your motion.
Thank you. I'll make the motion to approve PLN 2025-000-84 to allow 3-lot subdivision.
Second.
Any discussion? We have a first and a second. Let's have a roll call.
The roll call vote is as follows. Member Thomas?
Yes.
Member Mota?
Yes.
Member Fiebig?
Yes.
Member Davis?
Aye.
Member Devini?
Aye.
And Chair Moore?
Yes.
The ayes have it. 6-0 with one excused.
Thank you. Thank you for coming in, Alex, and your presentation. Okay, let's go on and move on to item number 3 on the agenda, the cell tower.
Yes, I will also be presenting this one. Again, the same planner is out sick today, so let me get there real quick. Okay, let's see if that worked. Let's see. So this is a conditional use permit renewal, PLN 2025-00108, to allow continued use of an existing wireless telecommunications facility for Verizon Wireless. Again, I'm presenting for Morales Miley. My name is Rodrigo Orduña. So again, this is continued. There are no changes proposed as part of this conditional use permit application to the wireless facility. And it should be understood that these are typically approved for every 10 years. And within those 10 years, as technology changes, the Federal Communications FCC Commission has passed legislation, or Congress has passed legislation that affects the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, that says that wireless facilities are allowed a certain percentage increment change that does not need to be reviewed publicly. And so between the last 10 years and today, there has been, I think, at least one, what we call a 6409 update to the facilities. A 6409 is a section in the federal legislation that allows these changes. And so it's got to be adjudicated at staff level. It's got to be reviewed at staff level. And then we constantly, continually approve these, but there are small changes to these facilities. Again, this is an existing facility. These are 3 existing poles, approximately 21 feet tall. And They're on a concrete pad and they're behind barbed wire. And you would think, ooh, barbed wire, terrible idea. However, these are not visible from the right of way. I will show you pictures. And so staff actually currently does not have any concern about the views of the barbed wire. The facility is located along Niles Canyon. We tried to show Alameda Creek at the bottom. It's off of Palomares Road. I've got better views coming up. Again, this is just the technical aspects of what's being renewed. There are three poles, 21 feet, almost 22 feet tall, with various antennas and conduits leading from an equipment area, 11 feet wide by 16 feet long. Usually these are about 15 feet tall. And these are located in two separate parts of the property. So Niles Canyon Road is shown over on the left. The property is shown in blue lines. It Niles Canyon curves around the property. This is on a very steep canyon, and so the site cannot be actually viewed as one travels up and down Niles Canyon. Here is a 3D view of the hillside. I tried to show as best as possible that any driver or anybody on a train would have to be really craning their neck, and there would be hillside actually blocking views of the antennas. So the antennas are located in the southernmost little blip, and the equipment cabinet is located in the northern blip. As you see here, there's more increased views here. The antenna poles are in this little blip. The cabinets are a little bit further north. This is a site plan of the poles. There's a monopole, 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 and there's an easement area with fencing around them, and the equipment cabinets are in a separate easement area with fencing around them, and you've got your standard cabinets, you've got your propane tanks to provide fuel, you've got your concrete pads to make sure everything is level and away from grass. This is what the facility looks like. It's 21 foot 9 to the top of the poles, and the antennas are below that. This is the existing condition. And you can see the barbed wire is basically just meant to keep the cattle out, and 21 foot 9 inches tall. Again, these are not visible from county rights of way. So, and these were originally approved like this, right? So before this is what was originally approved, there are no changes except for they change out the antennas quite often as technology improves. The antennas, the height of the pole hasn't changed. The antennas themselves have gotten a little bit bigger, a little bit fatter, a little bit taller, but their location is the same. The proposal to allow the continued use is in conformance with the general plan, we consider, because the general plan allows for quasi-public utilities that have a public benefit even in rural lands. It's not just restricted to urbanized lands. The zoning ordinance does not really speak to telecommunications facilities, but we do have a policy, a telecommunications policy, that these antennas comply with, in that they're located in a portion of the lot that is not visible from the public right-of-way, that even though they are uncamouflaged facilities, they are painted in such a way that if they were to be visible from below, they are only pretty much visible from below. As you look up, you're seeing a gray painted facility up against the blue-gray sky. They're not tall. They're not 50 or 70 feet tall like we see monopoles existing at times. These are, again, low and spread horizontally to provide the minimum exposure that will service the telecommunication needs. So again, our policy for telecommunications facilities, staff considers designed to minimize visual impacts. again, the nature of their location compared to the deep canyon makes them not visible from Niles Canyon Road. So they do use existing access roads when available. There's other facilities on this property that have similar situations, and therefore there's a single road accessing various carriers. And any fencing, again, this is remote agricultural land. There is no access to these facilities from the public. This is all privately held rural land that does not allow for any risk of private individuals accessing the wire fencing or the antennas themselves or the equipment cabinets themselves. So with that, staff would ask that this council recommend to the Board of Zoning Adjustments, because this is a conditional use permit, that the Board of Zoning Adjustments allow continued operation of the facility pretty much as is today. And staff is available for any questions.
Okay, why don't we go to public comment? And so we don't have any speaker cards for anybody in the room. Do you have anybody online that would like to speak on this item?
So the applicant is online, but if they wish to speak, they would raise their hand. Otherwise, there's nobody raising their hand.
Once, twice, thrice. Okay. We have nobody online. We have nobody in the room. I'm going to close the public portion of this item and go to the council for questions and comments. We'll start with Councilmember Devaney.
Just a couple of quick comments. Interesting to note that this was first approved as a telecommunication site and tower in 1985. Might be one of our original ones.
Yes.
And then, Rodrigo, you've been to many of these meetings where we're complaining that conditional use permits have expired and they're 20 years out. It looks like we're way ahead of the game on this one. It was last approved in 21. And then, like you said, you did a 6409 in 24. Why is it before us tonight?
So it's actually, there are various carriers out there. Let's see.
Okay.
The conditional use permit that approved this one was actually applied for in 2014. I have the number somewhere, 2014-00136, if memory serves. It actually expired 1 month after the applicant submitted the application. The applicant submitted this renewal June of 2025. That CUP expired July of 2025. Yes. Correct. Correct. So Castro Valley goes all the way up to Oakland and all the way down to Sunol at the very edge of Palomares. It hugs Palomares Canyon Road.
Councilmember Mota.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to get some clarification around the planning department's application fee of $670 for the wireless communication regulatory program.
Mm-hmm.
How is that calculated?
It was calculated when the policy was first enacted, and we haven't done any increase. We haven't adjusted for inflation. I can go back and figure out how it was originally considered, but basically the intent is for us to be able to keep up with the changing technology, go to conferences, update policy, update ordinance, and it's meant for staff to be able to, in essence, keep up with the changing technologies along with the carriers to be able to more properly regulate them.
Okay.
But so the telecommunications policy was in the 90s, so I can go back and find out how they justified that.
Yeah, I just want to know, just because the cost estimate would be about $8,000 per year, How is that? Is it flat rate justified per application, or does it? Is there a scale of the fee, or?
So it's $670 every time they come in for renewal. So it's a it's 670 every 10 years.
Okay. Okay. Thanks for clarifying that. My other question is, let's see. And you clarified that the it's not visible, the cabinet's not visible to the public or surrounding areas, including Niles Canyon Road, right?
Correct. It's not visible from the road. I actually did hike on the south side. Mm-hmm. There's a East Bay Regional Park, and you can look straight across and see pretty much everything. And these are visible from across the canyon on the south side. And whatever park, whatever regional park is down on the south side. I don't have that. I think it's Niles Canyon Park. So they are visible from trails across the canyon, far, like a great distance away. And I know that from personal hiking on the south side.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions.
Councilmember Fever.
No questions.
Okay, Councilmember Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the staff report. My question was already asked and answered as to why we're even considering this. I think it would be helpful if you could provide a map of what the county's perspective of Castro Valley is.
Yes, I can do that now. Let me see.
So if we, I was just looking for a hard copy at some point so that we okay. have it a general reference.
Okay, I can do that.
Other than that, I have no problem with this.
Councilman Thomas.
Rodrigo, you listen, you okay?
Yes.
You good? Okay.
Sorry, yes.
Any letters from the neighbors?
No.
Nothing. No. You send letters to neighbors?
Yeah, and these are huge properties, so we didn't send them to that many neighbors.
Okay. And no concern? No concern. Usually we get the stuff falling off the tower or...
There's no camouflaging, so these are just naked pieces of equipment that are out there.
Yeah, and how about maintaining the property? They do maintain pretty well, no complaints?
So there's nobody to see it to complain.
Okay.
It's not a fire risk. Fire goes out to inspect, make sure that there's no fire risk.
Okay.
And that's the concern.
Got it. Okay. That's all I have. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I just have a couple of questions. Any idea the size of this service area?
They do provide maps of the service area. Let's see.
I only ask that question because we have so many blind spots for service in Palomares Canyon, and I'm hoping that we can put a little pressure on some of these cell tower folks to help us with better service for the ranchers and farmers that live in these areas when we renew their permits.
Yes, let's see. That's the radiation study.
And my next question would be if there was a chance that they could tell us whether they could expand their service if it's like 5 miles, if they changed and updated their equipment, could they reach 10 miles so that we could get better coverage for, because I'm really concerned about the communication in the agricultural areas.
So normally the technology is such that they're actually need to provide more dense facilities. They need to provide a higher number of facilities to cover the bandwidth load. So they would actually each individual carrier, because of the additional load of bandwidth, would cover less area, and they would need to add more facilities is how the technology is going these days. So so it's not that this these antennas could expand, but now with our need for video and constantly having not just word data but actual video data being transmitted and such, they're actually needing to provide more facilities at a reduced range because they're carrying much more data individually. Now, so that's in general. We can, between here and the Board of Zoning Adjustments hearing, we can discuss with them specifically about their potential for additional technology to expand this specific facility. But in all likelihood, what they would do is request for a new conditional use permit for another tower nearby.
Right. I was just looking at this, and being it's not sightly, not seen from anywhere. Mm-hmm. It's would it be a possibility of raising the poles that the communication towers are mounted on? I mean, if we don't ask these questions about how to improve the communication in our agricultural areas, it's never going to happen. So
okay. I think that the applicant is here. Perhaps they can answer that question. They're okay. Raise their hand.
That would be great. And then, or to my understanding, that they're not the only cell tower that's on this pad?
Correct. Oh, on the property.
Right. So Verizon, and who else is on this pad?
Well, it used to be Sprint. I think they've changed names. They go through various names. T-Mobile, Sprint. May be best for me to let the applicant answer that question.
Yeah.
If the chair wishes, I could let them speak.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay. Taylor, if you could please unmute yourself.
Hi there. Good evening. My name is Taylor Lovely. I'm an applicant on behalf of ATC Sequoia LLC on behalf of Verizon. Just for the to start with first, in addressing the need for expanded coverage, that's something that we can address with Verizon, at least addressing, the potential need to expand coverage and fill in those gaps. So that's certainly something that we can take back to the customer and address between now and the next hearing.
Okay, thank you. Rodrigo, and this conditional use permit's good for how long?
10 years.
10 years. Huh, I wonder if we could make it for 2 years and see if they improve.
There's got to be a planning land use reason to...
Yeah, I understand. I just hate for it to come back in 10 years and be sitting here going, wow.
Well, the technology is changing exponentially. So in 10 years, there's going to be floating telecommunications.
Yeah, but my feeling is the agricultural area doesn't see technology as quickly as right. The urban area.
Right.
So that's my only comment. I would hope that the LLC is listening and would be responsive to helping a better communication network in our agricultural area.
Yes, absolutely. And I do believe that there's a state law that mandates a minimum of 10 years for a permit. However, given that, we're still more than willing and to listen to the board's concerns and work with them in the community. And I did just want to point out, I know as far as our tower here, there's only one customer is Verizon. For AT&T and Sprint, those may be other towers that are nearby, other customers. But for here, Verizon is serving us here.
I'm glad you cleared that up. So when they come before for their conditional use permits, we'll know where they're at and who they share it with, and hopefully we can get them to expand their coverage.
Very good.
Various. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rodrigo, I have no more questions. Any comments from the council? Okay. Somebody would make a motion?
I'll make the motion to approve PLN 2025-00108 conditional use permit renewal for a Verizon wireless telecommunications facility.
I second.
We have a first and a second. Any discussion? Okay, let's go roll call.
Yes, Member Thomas?
Yes.
Member Mota?
Yes.
Member Fiebig?
Yes.
Member Davis?
Aye.
Member Davini? And Chair Moore?
Aye.
Okay, the vote, the item passes 6-0 with one excused.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to item number H, which is the chair's report. I have really nothing to report. Any subcommittee reports from economic development? Bill is not here. Anybody on that subcommittee that have any comment? Okay. The business district, Bill is not here, and I think he's chairing that.
And can we get an update from planning as to what the status that is?
Yes, the contract update is being taken to the Board of Supervisors in October this month. And so we're anticipating that we would be coming back with Lisa Wise Consulting shortly thereafter. We are working with Bill and the subcommittee to make sure that the presentation is what the general consensus of what was heard by the MAC and the public at the last hearing, so that we can bring forward a framework plan that is more responsive to the comments.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, Chair, Council
Chair,
comments?
Yeah, Chair, I have a few comments. These are public works related as well. Rodrigo, would it be possible to pull up either Google Map or the parcel maps of an intersection of James Avenue and Redwood Road?
Well, let's if that's something we want to bring back here, we can put it on the agenda, but let's not get...
Chair, what I was planning on doing, and I don't need to do it, we could do it when it's on the agenda, but I wanted to address two different incidents that I observed, one of them being an accident, one of them being a very near accident, on new public work changes that are just being done right now and are creating a very unsafe driving condition. So I'm fine to defer that to an agendized item, and I'm really glad
yep.
that Mr. Foster came to present that, and it sounds like you're very open to putting that on the agenda.
Absolutely. We can agendize that item. And
I can keep my powder dry then until that time.
Perfect.
But it's a change where I literally witnessed an accident, and it's so predictable, and it's going to keep happening week after week after week until the change gets made. It's that poor of a design.
Okay. Well, we'll get Public Works back then. Okay. Any other council comments?
I have one. I want to shout out to Dan Davini for lending his equipment and personnel to help with the new Monarch Park, which is the strip park that's part of the old Rite Aid site along that's Frederick Street. Yeah. But he came in with his equipment and cleared out all the pampas grass, and is greatly appreciated for.
All right.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks for the acknowledgement. And that was for Forrester, an organization that seems to be doing really good things in Castro Valley. I mean, litter pickup, that's not real sexy, and they go out and do it a couple of times a month. They have a number of pocket parks that they're doing. They're doing gleaning. Normally you get just bad news on the internet, and I always love seeing their posts because it always makes me feel that here are citizens, you know, dedicating their time and resources, not costing the county a penny, and doing functions that are so important to beautify our city. So glad I was able to assist them in that.
Well, thank you. Any staff comments?
None at this time.
Do we have anybody online from staff? Any comments? Okay.
No.
With that, I am going to adjourn this meeting.